G'day, I am Mordechai Becher.
And I'm Yoshua Karsh.
And we are going to be discussing trees, more specifically Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of the month of Shvat, famously known as the Rosh Hashanah L'Ilanot, the New Year of Trees, or in a song that many of us learnt when we were in kindergarten, and all Israeli children, just about, actually maybe except for Haredim, but pretty much all Israeli kids learn this song in kindergarten, which is...
Tu B'Shvat Higi Yachad La'ilanot, Tu B'Shvat Higi Yachad La'ilanot, Hashemesh Pazorachat. Wait, I skipped.
Shkedia porachat.
Hashkedia porachat, Hashemesh pazorachat. Tziporim berosh kol gag. Mevasrot
bohachag.
Et bohachag. Tu B'Shvat Higia. Yes.
So
that was a...
Yeah.
You, yeah. It's okay that I didn't entirely get it, even though I have the words right in front of me. This has been a long time since kindergarten.
And kindergarten was a long time, yeah.
Yes.
And basically it says that the almond tree blossoms, the birds on every roof telling us that the sun is going to be shining and the festival of trees is coming and we should all plant trees. And you were telling me something about the history of that song.
Oh, yeah. So this song was composed in 1923. And
about when we were
apparently,
in kindergarten, approximately about the same, yeah.
A tad bit before. And so it was, apparently, it became a kind of standard of the movement to plant trees in Israel at that time. That became a huge push to plant trees. I think a lot of people that come now assume that Israel always looked like it does, just forests and forests and forests. And a lot of that has to do with the people who thought about planting trees early on. So, because we were, we were just briefly talking about how did it become what it became? And so, in other words, it has become more and more elaborately celebrated, Tu B'Shvat, and that maybe this is one of the factors that it became a kind of popularized through the song and through the notion of planting trees in Israel as a kind of, as a reflection of a person's Jewish connection to Israel, maybe.
Well, I don't know. I think there's like probably two components to the popularity. There's the old time popularity in Israel, and that's connected very much, as you said, after the destruction of the Second Temple and the exile of the Jews and the wars of the Romans, Israel was completely deforested. It was a barren landscape that, as Mark Twain put it, you could barely imagine it sustaining life. And then when we started coming back to Israel, the Jews started returning to Israel in the 19th century and early 20th century, one of the major plans, focuses of the early pioneers and settlers of Israel was to reforest the land of Israel and to make it green again, right? Make Israel green again, I think was the slogan.
Mega,
right. And they were very successful. They planted forests and all over the place.
I think people would call it a green country.
Very much so.
Yeah.
And actually, what's interesting is that I read a statistic that Israel was, I think, the only country in the world to have entered the 21st century with a net increase in the total amount of trees. In most countries, they're cutting down trees. Israel is planting
room.
Trees.
Yeah,
right?
Cool.
And trees, as we know, the best solution, as far as I can understand from my minimum grasp of climatology, for global warming is an abundance of trees.
Yes.
which convert the carbon dioxide into oxygen, which cool down the atmosphere and the earth, which provide habitation for animals and food and vegetation. It's unbelievable. Trees are an
Yes.
amazing thing. And so
Yes.
there's this passion in Israel about the planting of trees and the building. And even to this day, people all over, there's groups that will plant trees. You get a bar mitzvah certificate from JNF, Jewish National Fund, and that a tree was planted in your name, et cetera, et
Right.
cetera. And so it is a big deal in Israel in the love for the land, which, as you know, Israeli government offices and private companies will often, you'll often see a sign that closed for a tiul. They've gone on a hike. They literally have gone on a hike. They
That is
will close a government office or something like that because they,
yes.
and a lot of companies have annual hikes. Hiking is a big deal in Israel. And the Gemara
Yes.
says, if you walk 4 cubits in the land of Israel, you have acquired a portion in the world to come. I mean, there is something about walking
Yes.
in the holy land of Israel
Yes.
and planting trees there. And so there's a mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Israel, which is making Israel. The Ramban, when he talks about the mitzvah of living in Israel, he divides it into more or less three components. There is the mitzvah of living there, the mitzvah of owning the land, that Jews should own it, and the third is making it a more habitable place.
Nice.
So I think planting a tree there, even if you're not living there, I think, and especially if you
You're
are,
taking part of the mitzvah.
that's certainly Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. It's making Israel. There's an amazing Chasam Sofer in his commentary on Sukkah, Gemara Sukkah. The Chasam Sofer says that, the famous argument Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So
Yes,
Rabbi
about
Shimon bar
work.
Yochai says, only learn Torah. Rabbi Yishmael says, Torah in Derech Eretz. You have to do both, engage in a livelihood and engage in learning Torah, and you'll be successful. The Gemara says most people who followed Rabbi Shmuel were successful. Many
Yeah.
people following Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yochai were not successful. It's only for the few. But the
Right.
Chasam Sofer says that which is it is permitted to in to only, or rather, I'm not sure how to put this, that which is appropriate to engage in a livelihood as well as learning Torah only applies in Israel. Because only in Israel are you fulfilling the mitzvah of Yishuv Haaretz, of
Because
settling into the
the
land.
assumption was that, because that's the way it's discussed in the Gemara, that livelihood would mean agriculture. You'd be working the land or something connected to, is that it?
I don't know. I think he seems to be saying in a broader, at least he says it in two places, but I think in a broader understanding, he seems to be saying that the idea of engaging in a livelihood as well as learning is an Israel thing. Because the livelihood in Israel, if you build a falafel store, you've made
Right.
the land more inhabitable. If you
Is that
pave a
mitzvah? You're
road,
saying that? You're
yeah,
saying
if
that
I'm saying that if
you
you
would
pave a
fulfill the
road.
mitzvah of Yishuv. I get the pave the road part, but I want to go back to the falafel stand. You're saying
Absolutely. Why
if
not? You open a kosher restaurant in Israel. Have you not made the land more inhabitable? You open a supermarket. You open a soup factory, right? All these are making to inhabit a land. You can't just have agriculture. You've got to
yes.
live somewhere. You've got
Okay.
to wear something. You've got to, I mean, I think all of that is included. And the
Okay.
Chasam Sofer implies that. So, which means this idea of only learning, people who, that's it, just kollel, learn forever, right? That only, according to the Chasam Sofer, that's only okay outside of Israel. In Israel, you're supposed to engage in the making of this land, of that land, right? A better country, a better place to live. It's unbelievable. So I think the planting of the trees is part of that
Well,
whole
if
Israeli
you're gonna
culture.
extend it to that place, wouldn't having children in the land of Israel be a part of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael?
I don't think so. Not if you don't provide
Falafel
them.
stores you're just all excited about, but having children you don't think builds up the country?
That would depend. If you are providing them a livelihood and a means of earning a livelihood, then you are indeed building up the country. If you
Don't
are
they come
sending them
born?
to
Don't
people
they
who will
come
be
born with bread?
begging for money in
What
Israel and
is the
outside of
Gemara?
Israel,
What
I'm
is
not
the
sure how that's
Chazal?
building up the country.
I forget the Chazal that says every child is born with bread in his basket or something. What is the Chazal? There's something like that. You don't have to worry about the livelihood of your children.
In practice, you do. The Gemara, the Mishnah
It
says
does make I
you're supposed to
yes.
teach your child a trade, and
Yeah.
if you don't teach him a trade, you're teaching him to steal.
Yes.
So now teaching him a trade is to teach him how to make a livelihood. That means
Yes.
you're responsible to do that.
Yeah.
So, but either way, we're
Where did
getting a slightly
Remeir
off
live?
topic, that which
Where
is
did
my fault.
Remeir live, according to you? Where did Remeir live?
Reb Meir, who said, "Ani, I will only teach my son Torah." Reb Meir
Yes.
lived in Israel,
Yes, he did.
but notice that he's arguing in the Mishnah with Reb Nehorai,
But I thought that's him.
who says you have to teach your child a trade. So the commentaries ask, the Gemara in Erevin says Reb Nehorai and Reb Meir are the same person.
Right.
So is he arguing with himself? No, he's saying that for the few, it's okay.
But oh, but you're still
But for the
seeing it's
many,
okay.
it's not. It should not be a widespread public policy. It should be something which the most unique and talented individuals will do, like Reb Meir.
Okay, but he's doing it in Eretz Yisrael. So you
Correct.
agree that the few, the brave, the
For sure.
strong,
Chasam
that those
Sofer,
people
yeah.
can be in Eretz Yisrael.
Well, the Chasam Sofer is saying that argument, Reb Shimon bar Yochai and Rabbi Shmuel is only in Israel. In other
Right,
words,
but you are implying that according to Chasam Sofer, it would be inappropriate for somebody to be
Rabbi
learning all
Shmuel's view.
day.
Yeah, I should have made that clear. Rabbi Shmuel's view would be inappropriate
Okay.
outside of Israel. Rav Shimon bar
Okay.
Yochai, yeah,
Okay. Rav
which is
Shimon bar
also
Yochai
for
is
the
good
few.
in Israel.
Yeah. So one aspect which made Tu Bishvat very popular, especially in Israel, is the whole passion that people in Israel have for the land, for the agriculture, for the trees. There's a beautiful Reb Shimshon Raphael Hirsch in his commentary on the Siddur. We say on Yontif, I think, Galinu me'aretzeinu
Nisrachaknu.
v'nisrachaknu me'al admasein, which means Galinu me'aretzeinu means we've been exiled from our land. V'nisrachaknu me'al admasein, we've been distanced from our soil. He says, what's the difference? Isn't that repetitious? Sounds
Yeah.
repetitious. So he says this, Galinu me'aretzeinu means we've been exiled from the land of Israel. He says, as a result of that, Nisrachaknu me'al admasein, we don't have a feeling of connection to our land, to the earth. He said, we've become urbanized, right? Most Jews wouldn't recognize a fruit tree, right? Unless you walked into, or unless, like in our neighborhood, in the beginning of Nisan, people with fruit trees in their gardens put a sign on it, fruit tree, you can make a bracha on this. He says there's a the part of the result of being exiled is we no longer feel an attachment to the soil. But thank God, we've recovered that to some degree. A lot of Israelis, there are Jews who are farmers, ranchers, right?
And the
Growing
teal,
vineyards,
those
flowers.
teulim that you were talking about,
Yeah, so there's a
the
beautiful
purpose of the
component.
teulim is
Yeah.
to feel a love for the land.
And I think we've come back to the Admasenu. There's an appreciation for the earth, for the soil.
Right.
There's
The
something very
greening, the
beautiful.
pride that we take in the greening of the land, the greening of the desert.
Yeah.
We take a lot of pride in it. Drip technology.
Yeah.
Lot of
My
Jews take pride in that.
son was just telling me, if, like 2 weeks ago, one of my sons, that he and his kids went, fo they live on a moshav. It's an agricultural settlement near Ramat Beit Shemesh. They went foraging for herbs, and they found fresh herbs, and they cooked with it. They made a recipe with it. So
Seriously.
that's awesome. I went with him when
Yes.
I was there, not last time, but 2 times ago. They have a neighbor with olive trees, and it was the olive season. So I went with my son and grandson, and we shook branches of the olive tree with a tarp underneath,
Now you
harvested.
cannot eat olives off the
No.
tree.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we first of all shook them onto the tarp, and then brought them back to his house in buckets. He and his wife then checked them for bugs, chucking out the ones which looked like they had a hole in them. He then put them in brine, cleaned them, and put them in brine in order to, I don't know what that does. It softens
Pickles
them and sweetens. It pickles them. That's right,
them.
really pickles them. And then you can eat them. They're delicious.
Right. But you
So it's very
cannot,
much.
I was surprised by that. You cannot
No,
eat a raw olive.
very bitter. But there's a beauty in that, doing that with my son and grandson in the land of Israel, harvesting an olive tree, like, wow. So that's part of Tu Bishvat. There's another aspect, which is the current trend of neo-Hasidism and neo-mysticism. There's a
The
very,
Seder.
that's right. Yeah, a lot of people have gotten into Kabbalistic ideas, whether they understand and misunderstand and distort them, or can't even pronounce the Hebrew of them, or not, whatever. But there is a popularity, with good reason, for a lot of beautiful mystical ideas,
Right.
and people have got into it for that.
I attended one last year. My friend Ari Siegel hosted it, and I was surprisingly moved by it. I went to be polite initially, but I was surprisingly moved by it. It somehow achieved a result where I left feeling very connected to Eretz Yisrael, to
That's
the land.
beautiful. So
Yeah,
it did what it's
somehow.
supposed to do.
And there was 4 cups of wine, which I'm not sure if that helped or what, but I think that was part of it. I
Well,
think
there
that
is
might have
not
been part
only
of it.
amazing Israeli wine, but Israel produces now single malt whiskey. Award-winning single malt whiskeys.
Now, when you say award-winning, have you ever heard of any of these before you see the governing body or whoever gives the award? Have you ever heard of these governing bodies before you see it on the label?
No, I have not. No,
And
I
have
will
you ever
admit. No.
researched to find out that the wine company or the single malt whiskey does not own the award
Well,
that they bestowed?
I did see one of the award ceremonies, which was
You did.
in Glasgow, Scotland. I saw it on a video. Glasgow, Scotland. And it was some international whiskey tasting thing, and they did blind tasting. And M&H, Milk and Honey Whiskey of Israel, made in Tel Aviv, was won the best tasting whiskey in the world.
Are
So
you kidding
I'm
me?
not I'm quite serious. Yeah, quite serious. And there's a few brands of Israeli whiskey which are just phenomenal, and they're locally made, and the climate affects it. There's one which is matured in the Dead Sea region. There's one matured up in the Golan Heights,
There's no
and
peat, right? There's no peat in Israel. Like,
no,
you don't get like that kind of
I
peaty,
don't think so. No, that you don't have. But
smoky thing.
yeah, so I think it's beautiful that the Tu Bishvat Seder has become popular. I personally do it with the fruits Israel is blessed with, Bisli, Crembo, Mekupelet,
How do you eat your crembo?
Odd Kapit,
There's
top
different
down,
theories about do you some people just pull off the chocolate first and just eat the chocolate around the marshmallow,
yes,
right? You
very
really
popular.
should. But then there's a question: do you make a Mizonos on that, or is it just a geschmack a holder? I
I think
mean,
it's just a
what is
holder,
it?
yeah, that's in my opinion, yeah. Okay, so getting to Tu Bishvat again. Well, so traditionally, what is Tu Bishvat is the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah tells us there's four beginnings of the Jewish year, each one for different halachic reasons, to count documents for kings, to count the years, for the festivals, and so on and so forth. So the one of them, according to Shammai, the house of Shammai, the first of Shvat is the new year for trees, and Beit Hillel says it's the 15th. So there are a number of ramifications to that. The first is tithes. So the Torah says you're supposed to give tithes from the fruit, so we are told that the cut-off date, it's like the tax date. So you have to give for each year. The cut-off date for giving tithes for the tree is Tu Bishvat. So just more specifically, if the tree has buds on it before Tu Bishvat, before the 15th of Shvat, whatever fruit it grows from those buds, even if it's a couple of months later, belongs to last year. And you give Maaser tithes from the last year. If the buds appear after Tu Bishvat, it goes by the next year. So, in other words, it depends on the budding of the tree. So, I remember Reb Moshe Shapiro discussing that once. That with vegetables, the time that you take tithes from vegetables is when it's large enough to harvest. That's what determines the tithing season or year. When it comes to fruit, all you have to see is a bud on the tree, and already that's considered like the fruit's there, which is fascinating. So Reb Moshe Shapiro, quoting, I don't remember if it was the Ramban or the Ritva, but one of the Rishonim on the page, Reb Moshe quoted that, why is that so? He said, because the Gemara says that most of rain which will fall that season has fallen by Tu Bishvat. And the tree absorbs nutrients, water, and it stores it in the sap. Which means once you see a bud, all the energy and nutrients needed for the fruit are already there in the tree.
It's moving. It's the does do they acknowledge a dormant period where it's the sap is not moving in the tree?
Yeah,
And
but
so is that's an indication of the sap moving that has it's moved. It's
yes, that's
woken
right.
up in a
And but
sense.
the reason you can consider the fruit already there is because everything you need for the fruit's in the tree. All you need is sunlight now. So the tree is like storing up the energy, storing up the nutrients, and by Tu Bishvat, if there's a bud, bam, the fruit's already there. With vegetables, it's what you see is what you get. No storage system. The nutrients go straight into the vegetable.
It's not
So
a separate. Oh, I see.
as soon
Interesting.
as it's large enough to harvest, that's when it's
Yeah.
considered tithing. So based on that, Reb Moshe said an amazing idea. He said that's why a righteous person is compared to a tree, and the evil person is compared to like herbs and grass. All right? Vayatzitzu rasha'im kmo esev. The evil appear like herbs, grass. Tzaddik, a righteous, katamar yifrach, is like a palm, a date palm. So Reb Moshe said, because the rasha lives for the here and now, it's like the vegetable. The tzaddik, the righteous, understands the idea of storage, restraint, keeping it in, and using it at the appropriate time.
Does this remind you of that principle, the Gemara principle of Kol HaRoi LeBila, that there are certain acts that need to technically take place, but as long as it could take place, we already consider it as if it had taken place to some degree?
This,
Or
I
is
think,
this
is much
something
more than
different?
that. This is something which everything it's there. You can see the fruit's there because all the necessary components are there.
It's technically not a fruit yet, but
Right.
you
It's
know it's going to be a fruit, but it's not a fruit
correct.
yet.
Interesting comparison. I didn't think of it that way. Maybe I don't know. But then Reb Moshe added to that something very beautiful. So the righteous person compared to the tree, because the righteous person understands the idea of storage, restraint, bringing it out things at their appropriate time. Evil inclination is all about the here and now. That's why there's a Gemara where Rabbi Anasi says that who was talking to Antoninus maybe, who said, when does the evil inclination enter the fetus, enter the person? When it's in utero or at birth. So he brought two proofs, one textual. Because it says, Lepetach chatas roivetz, sin crouches at the door, at the entrance. That's when it's sin. And the second logic he gives is, if the evil inclination would be in the fetus in utero, it would never go through full pregnancy. Hayemava'et v'yotzeh, would kick and leave.
Like Aesop,
It's a
too
strange thing.
trite.
So the Maharal explains because the existence of the fetus is only for the is not for the here and now at all. The fetus only exists for the future. Whereas the Yetzer Hara only exists for the here and now. So the evil inclination and the fetus cannot exist in the same world, in the same environment, because one exists only for the future, the other exists only for the now. And Reb Moshe also used that to explain an interesting linguistic difference in Western culture and Torah. Right? He said the Rishon is based on a pasuk in Iyov, and Ramban talks about it in the Chumash. They refer to youth as Yemei Churfi, which means the days of my winter. Now, in English literature, winter is a reference to old age, and youth is spring or summer. I think there's some sonnets of Shakespeare and maybe Leaves of Grass. Walt Whitman, is it? Yeah, talks about.
No, Leaves of Grass is Walt Whitman.
Walt Whitman.
Like, not Emerson, right?
Yeah,
Emerson
it's
something,
Whitman.
but
Whitman.
yeah, that's Whitman. Yeah.
So, in any case, why is it that in Western thought, old age is winter, and in Jewish thought, old age is youth is winter? So he says because winter is the time of absorption of nutrients and storage for the appropriate time. He says, when do you harvest it? In Jewish thought, we harvest it in old age. When do you harvest it? In the produce that you have produced, whether it be Torah, whether it be charity, whether it be children and grandchildren, whether it be relationships, that's when you're harvesting. When do you harvest all that? Old age. So old age is spring and summer. Youth is winter when you're absorbing. If, however, you come from the perspective of life being about consumption and harvesting, when can you consume the most? When you're a youth. Hence, youth is spring and summer, old age is winter. That's how Reb Moshe looked at it. That's the whole tree idea.
But
And that
he also,
halachically,
I remember him talking about how during the winter, and this is the case with almost all of life, begins undercover. Because it's very vulnerable in the beginning, it begins undercover. Behind a shell, if it's an egg, or underground, if it's a plant, etc. So it's the most important initial phase is happening out of sight, and so that in some ways could also be a model for youth, that it's your youth are those years. And eventually, when you start to show your fruit, that is going to be later on. It's going to be the fruit of the work that went into it up until then, something like that.
Interesting. Rav Shlomo Fischer in Beis Yishai says something similar. He talks about the tree having three components: the shoresh, the roots, the gezer, the trunk, and the anafim, the branches. He says the shoroshim, which for everything starts, are very much undercover. They're underground. You don't see the roots, but they grow and supply. The primary, the essence of the tree is the trunk. That's very visible, etc. And from the trunk comes all the various branches, leaves, and fruits. So he compares that to three times in the human being. He says youth is like the shoroshim, where the roots, where it's indeed undercover to some degree, not well known. He says your middle part of your life is the trunk, where you're where if that's strong, everything is strong. Right, and if that grows, everything will grow. And then from that towards the end are the branches and the fruits, etc. He says history is like that as well. He talks about the Torah, Tanakh, Mishnah, Gemara. He says Tanakh are like the roots.
Nice.
He says the Mishnah is like the trunk. And the Gemara is like the branches and fruits that come out of that. He also says you can see history also in terms of Gaonim, the Gaonim who were like the roots, We don't know the names of a lot of Gaonim, but they were producing and they were produced. And what they produced, the trunk was the Rishonim, the medieval scholars, the Rambam, the Rashba, Rashi, the Baalei Tosfos. That's like the trunk. And he says the Acharonim, the later scholars, are like the branches and the leaves and the fruits that come out of that.
Nice,
And
nice.
he has numerous analogies for this idea, which just is an entire drosha on it. It's his drosha on Tu B'Shvat, where he talks about this idea, and just it's very interesting. He says, So anyway, apropos of that, the other aspect of the tree is that it's also Tu B'Shvat also designates the year regarding Orla, which is when does the tree with the 3 years you can't eat from the fruit of the first 3 years. So Orla is defined as the year ends at Tu
Now,
B'Shvat.
how does it work? Did it have to take root before Tisha B'Av? Is that how?
At Tu
So,
B'Shvat, yeah, I think so, yeah.
if it took root, because I remember planting a lemon tree, and that was a consideration, that if I planted it I don't know, a few weeks or a month before Tu B'Shvat, then that would be year one, and once Tu B'Shvat happens, that's already year two.
Yeah, correct,
So,
correct.
and that's the effect. So you could have, like, obviously you could end up having a fruit which is really basically 2 years old,
Relatively
two and a
young, yeah,
little bit, and
correct.
quite young. Yeah,
Yeah,
if it was done like that. I once went apple picking somewhere in Illinois, and I asked one of the guys who work there if they had any fruit younger than 3 years. Do they have apples? And he pointed to places where the apples are under, because you don't think that you could that they would that it can produce it that quickly or something that would be edible. But
Right.
yeah, I mean, a
Outside
lot.
of,
Yeah,
yeah.
go ahead. Go ahead.
But
Yeah.
outside of Israel, the halacha is that if it's a doubt, you can eat, you don't have to, you
Right.
don't have to check. Like you
Right.
go
Now, I
to,
wasn't doing it to
oh, I'm
mess
saying,
up.
okay.
I wasn't trying to mess it up. I was just curious what it looked like. Oh
Right.
yeah, I'm
Got it.
sorry, because that could sound like now this is somehow putting into question our fruit. So I'm glad you pointed that out. I wasn't trying to do that. I was just
No,
trying
no.
to I was
No, I
just
get that. I
asking
get
because
that.
I didn't think what could they produce anyways? Like, what are you worried about? And then he showed me actual, apples.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So why Tu B'Shvat? Why the 15th of Shvat? So the Gemara and Rashi seem to understand that it's because in Israel, by Tu B'Shvat, most of the rain that will have fallen that winter or that season has fallen by then. The Meiri says it's like it's the midpoint of winter. It's halfway through winter. It's a middle point between the seasons of fall and spring. So once half the winter has passed, the strength of winter is weakened. The cold is not as intense, although looking outside my window today, although I'm in New Jersey, not in Israel. So in Israel, it's different. So the cold is not as intense. The fruit begins to form more rapidly. So there are agricultural reasons for this. So how do we celebrate it? So you were mentioning this Tu B'Shvat Seder. That's
Yeah.
there's a Magen Avraham. In Shulchan Aruch, who says it's a custom to eat specifically fruits on Tu B'Shvat. I remember my father, Olav HaSholem, telling me his family lived in Poland. They were all murdered in the Holocaust, and they
And
were
you
type
had
of
a
middle class, and they used to. His father, my grandfather, used to somehow obtain a crate of oranges from Israel every Tu B'Shvat.
really?
Yeah, they would get imported. Apparently, I think it must have cost a reasonable amount,
Yeah.
they used to have that on Tu B'Shvat, oranges from the land of Israel.
We, for some reason, always had carob.
Yes, that's a thing to have. Yeah, carob, which doesn't taste great.
Does not.
No.
Tastes like leather.
Yeah. We also don't say Tachanun. We do not say the prayer of penitence. So it's a happy day. You're not supposed to have a fast. We don't proclaim a fast day on Tu Bishvat. So there is some, it's not, a full-fledged festival, but, we eat fruit. We don't say Tachanun. It's a great pleasure. It's one of my son-in-law mentioned to me that there are certain pleasures that only Jews can have. I said, like what? He said, going to shul and realizing in the morning that there's no Tachanun today. There's no, like, especially a Monday or a Thursday. So it says that's a delight that only we can appreciate. Or realizing that, oh, wait, I'm not fleishig. I can have dairy. Right? Right. Most of the world's population will never experience a pleasure like that.
Yes.
There's something to be said for that. That's
You also said there's a some kind of phrase, if the feeling of having davened.
Oh,
What was it?
that
How does
was
it
from the
go?
Rosh Yeshiva of Shar Yoshuv, Rav, famous Rosh Yeshiva of Shar
Freifeld?
Yoshuv, huh?
Rabbi Freifeld? Rabbi
Rabbi
Freifeld.
Freifeld. He once said, "What's the definition of a happy Jew?" So he said, "The definition of a happy Jew is shoin gedavent, shoin gebenched, und parv," meaning you've prayed, you've already said grace afternoon of Birkat HaMazon, you've already benched, and you're parv. He says, there is no greater moment of joy than that because the whole world is open possibilities. You've davened. You're parv, you can eat anything. You've benched. You have to, like, it's ultimate joy. I think he might have been being a little bit ironic,
You think
sarcastic.
so? You think
It
so?
could be, but
Possible.
I think there's
Possible.
truth to it. There's truth to it. So anyway, it is customary also. We eat the fruits that Israel is blessed with. We mentioned, of course, Krembo, but in the Torah itself, we have the seven fruits of Israel: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and dates.
No almonds in that list.
Interesting, yes, even though the song is almonds.
Yes, he chose almonds for some
Almonds are the
reason.
first trees to blossom, generally. That's why in Hebrew, shaked is almond, but the word
Yeah.
shaked also means I will be diligent and quick. Right, when Hashem asks Yirmiyahu, the prophet Jeremiah, I think 31, he says, Ma atah ro'eh Yirmiyahu, what do you see? He sees the boiling cauldron, and he also sees that's trouble coming from the north. He also says, Makel shaked ani ro'eh, I see the branch of an almond. And Hashem says, Ki shaked ani al dvarai la'asoisoi, I'm going to be diligent, right, to do it.
Right.
So I think that's because
But
almond trees blossom early.
you have a Yirmiyahu reference. You also have Aaron's mata, which blossoms
Almonds,
into a
yeah.
shaked.
Yeah.
So you would think that it would be, you could hear why somebody would prominently
It's interesting, yeah.
bring them, because you have these very biblical roots for this thing.
Right. There are
But
other fruits Israel's blessed with, like sabra, oranges,
When's the last
mangoes,
time you had a Sabra? When was the last
persimmons.
time? When was the last time you had a Sabra fruit?
Last time I had a sabra. Was not long ago, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
I have not had one since I was like a teenager.
Oh, I've had
It's
sabra.
not the kind of thing that comes up a
I
lot.
think Rosh Hashanah. I think we had sabra Rosh Hashanah.
They used to have these
Yeah.
Arab women who sat like on the street with like a basket of Sabra, and somehow their hands were so leathery that they could like hold the fruit. Didn't matter to them. They peel it for you and give it to you. Anytime I would touch it, I would get a thousand little
Yeah.
prickers in
It
my
is
hands.
prickly. Hence, it's called the prickly pear, I think.
Yes. And the fruit that is used as the great symbol of the Israeli, the Sabra.
Right. So anyway, but yeah, there is sanctity to the fruit of Israel. We know we say a special bracha on those fruits, the after blessing, right? The lengthy after blessing on those fruits, and if they're actually from Israel, we would actually type of say that in the grammar of the blessing for eating. I'll that we bless God for the land and its fruits, peiros seho, its fruits. So there is something to be said for eating those fruits. I personally like to buy things from Israel just because I want to support the state of Israel.
But
I want to support the Jews of the land of Israel, so I try to buy things which are Israeli.
that does create halachic issues. But before we get into this, just one thing about the persimmon. Is shemen afarsamon
No.
connected at all to the persimmon?
No, it's not. No. It's a different, no. Different
So
tree.
it's is that a modern Hebrew
Yeah, I think so.
word, you think,
I think so.
afarsamon,
Yeah.
the connection? Okay, and then question number two is, does that not create all manner of halachic issues? Because how do you know that the fruit had trumas and maasros taken from it? And how do you know if it was from Shemitah or all those kind of questions?
Well, regarding Shemitah, so you have to know the years and you have to check it out. And Tnuva does keep track of that. That's the major agricultural exporter in Israel. It's possible to find out. As far as taking tithes, so we have membership in something called Keren HaMaaseiros, which is the Maaser Fund in Israel, and they have well, they have special designated coins where you can
Pruta
Pruta Chamura designated coins, and they keep them there. You pay, it's not that much, like $30 a year or something like that. And we get a little card. And my wife, when she buys stuff at Costco, which is from Israel, and we do try to buy from Israel, she just takes Trumas and Maaseiros. She takes the Trumas and Maaseiros and follow the instructions on the card and says the appropriate declaration, and bingo.
So, do you think there should be a warning on this particular podcast? Do not do this at home. This is
Do
only
this at
done
home.
by a professional on a closed circuit.
I think you should ask your local rabbi how to do it, and I don't think you should not buy it because of that, right? I think you should, on the contrary, ask your LOR, local Orthodox rabbi, right, and do it this way. A, you are supporting the Jews of the land of Israel. B, you are eating fruit which has got the sanctity and the holiness of the land of Israel. Right. C, you are quasi-performing at least the rabbinic commandment of taking tithes, etc. I think it's a beautiful, well, right? It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Why would you not want to do that? I don't, you know. So it's a good thing to do for Tu Bishvat. And there are other great stuff. I mean, the Israeli wine is just fantastic, just
Yes,
superb,
that I
superb. I'm
agree.
not going to advertise any particular brand, but they're all superb. Just
Do you know, it dawned on me when I was with a group that visited one of these wineries and did a wine tasting. That's become a kind of touristy thing to do where you go to these ones. So it dawned on me what an incredible sales technique it is, because we tend to not pay attention when we eat and drink. And therefore we don't really recognize the fullness of the flavor or the aroma of anything, because we're not even paying attention. We're just, putting it in our mouth, who knows what we're, et cetera. But they get you to relax. They get you to take in the aroma fully. You're focused completely on the bouquet, and then you're focused entirely on the various qualities in the this it could be the simplest, least impressive wine, but the fact that you just paid attention,
Yes,
it's such a
it is.
great technique.
But it's also a great technique for achieving greater happiness and gratitude. And Rav Yehuda
Yes.
Halevi says that's one of the purposes of brachos.
Yes.
One of the purposes of blessings before you eat is to pay attention and think about the blessing and think about that is to say God's blessing to you that you have
Right.
this and the enjoyment and that you could have not had it and you have
Right.
it. And he said, when you do that, you'll be a happier, better person.
I once did I had a
Right.
group that we did a meditative brach. I've done this many times,
I
but
was
like a
I was at a
yeah, oh,
Lent
that's
dinner
right.
once.
That one. Yeah. So I've done a bunch of times a meditative bracha where you have an apple and you think about it beforehand. You talk a little about the bracha, you think about the apple, where it came from, etc. I remember the first time I did it with a group years ago, it dawned on me. While we, because we agreed to just eat the apple sort of in silence, just sort of to pay attention to to everything about the apple. And I realized that it's not simply to have a moment of gratitude before I eat, but to then eat with gratitude. In other words, the whole thing can
Yes.
become an experience of
Absolutely.
gratitude. Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know, maybe I'm just being a little hero worship here, but I
Yeah.
remember Moshe Shapiro when someone would bring him a coffee,
Yeah.
and his bracha on the coffee I just felt was something I would love to hear, and I
I had
just like
this
to see that,
a while
just.
back. You remember when he would have tea, if he could, he would have like a spoonful of honey.
Yes.
And he'd make the broth on the honey, and then he'd eat the honey first, and then he'd drink the tea. So I remember wondering if he did that because of the bracha achrona. I wasn't sure. And I asked Akiva Tatz about it, and he goes, no, he just
He
likes
likes
honey. I had this whole
the
deep thing about it that he was doing
honey.
it
You
for
write a
the bracha
shiur on the
achrona and
subject.
everything.
Vara isias moiri vareb. Okay, I think we've covered a reasonable amount of the part of it
Oh,
all.
wait, one thing.
Yes.
The Machlokas Hillel and Shammai. Why is there, is it significant? Is there something underlying their opinions that represent a significant difference in view, or is it a technical difference between
I
Hillel and
always
Shammai?
understood it as technical, but I'm sure there is something deeper behind it. I did not actually have a chance to look into that.
I'm sorry.
We're
Yeah,
snowed
no problem.
under here, and there was time spent that instead of investigating, shoveling snow.
You're
So,
not supposed to shovel snow.
are you not?
No,
Well,
not at your age.
you're from Milwaukee, so.
No, you are not supposed to shovel snow at your age. I don't
I
think
wasn't
above
doing a lot,
50.
just doing a little bit,
It
just a
doesn't
little.
matter. It's the combination of the cold and the stuff. It's not good. It's dangerous for.
I didn't do a lot. I
I'm
took a
very
very small
Machbed on
amount,
this
very
thing.
small amount.
I'm extremely Machbed about
Okay,
this thing
that's
of
good.
not shoveling and
No.
having
Well,
nephews and children and stuff like that shovel because. No, but
okay.
seriously, do not shovel anymore.
Thank you.
It's not good for
Okay.
you.
All right.
All right.
Okay, folks,
Okay.
thank you for watching and listening. And we do get feedback, and we got some interesting emails, and I meet people who give me feedback, and it's always a pleasure. So please press like and share it on social media, and share it through email, whatever, however you share things, and
And
subscribe for any time. Yeah.
if anybody has listened to earlier podcasts and remembers any of the details from them, I had a rant. I had a rant about something that always comes up on Tu B'Shvat. It was, I don't remember how it was, I feel it was fairly early, that particular rant about Adam Eitz HaSoda,
Oh,
how that
yes.
always comes up. That
I don't remember
always
which
comes
episode
up in
that was
Divrei
in.
Torah. Yes,
He had a rant
about.
about people misinterpreting things and
Right. The,
claiming they're pshat
right.
when
They're not
they're
pshat.
a drush, they're not pshat.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So then they quote the pasuk as if they're
As
quoting
if, yes.
a literal pshat reading of the pasuk,
Correct.
as if the Torah is saying, yes, a man is a tree of the field.
But it's a question.
Yes, it
So
is a
this is a
question. Yeah.
re-rant.
Yes, no, I'm just
Is it?
pointing it out
It's a
just to
re-rant.
because they people deserve, every once in a while, kudos if they remember something from an earlier
Right,
podcast.
yeah.
So for
So
you people who remembered that, I'm
put in
mentioning
a
it now.
comment. You could put in a comment on,
Yes.
there's two ways to comment. You can comment on Torah anytime, and you can comment on YouTube. Either way, you can comment. So please do. And watch, share, subscribe, do whatever is necessary, short of hurting someone. Short of hurting someone.
And
So,
you could send us your thoughts about the Machlokas
yes,
Hillel
please
and
do.
Shammai,
Please do.
about
Yes.
Hillel and Shammai, any
If
deep
anyone, yeah,
something or other you've
good
got
to
on
hear.
that.
Okay. Thank you very
Okay.
much. Have a wonderful Tu B'Shvat, everyone. Chag ha'ilanot sameach. Hug a tree.